Now, we wanted to speak to the head of operations, basically, the NRL, Graham Annesley, about the obstruction rule, and he had a bit to say about it at his weekly meeting on and address to the nation, as it were, on Monday. And a lot's cropped up, obviously, through last night's game as well at Stadium Australia. And listeners are starting to send through questions as well for Graham Annesley, who always fronts up. He's on the line. Graham, how are you going?
G'day, Andrew. How are you?
Mate, really well. Appreciate you joining us. And we'll get to the obstruction stuff in a moment. But if I could just ask you about a couple of things from last night first. I don't know whether you've had a chance to sit and study it all other than watching the game. But Dominic Young was sent off in the 27th minute. We all thought that was the right decision, the only decision. And he's got a two-week minimum suspension from the NRL. Victor Adley was sin-binned. We didn't agree with that in the call. This is what Trent Robinson had to say. And I'm keen to get your reaction, Graham. Here's Trent Robinson last night.
Hit high and it's not good for Blake, obviously, you know, you don't want to see that, you know, and it hit him in the jaw, but it wasn't a swinging arm, it was open-handed, it was lower than shoulder height, you know, if that's the standard, that's fine, but that's a new one for me. I feel like that's lower than what's been sent off before, you know, it just feels like, you know, we can set a new standard here again. That's how it feels. And then Rads has won. I mean, Rads's was ridiculous. Mm. That was Connor's the one that tackles him from behind and twists his ankle, and then he falls on that ankle. You know, how they got that to that decision. That's incredible. You know, it's just that was below par.
So that was Trent Robinson last night. I have no idea whether you've had a chance to review this in any detail, Graham. Have you got a reaction to either those two incidents or Trent Robinson's comments?
Well, Andrew, I mean, obviously I can't speak about the send-off because that's still subject to the judicial process. In relation to the Radley incident, my understanding is that the Match Review Committee, after reviewing that, considered it to be the contact with the leg to be accidental and not careless, and they did take into consideration the contribution to Connor Watson, as Trent referred to. They decided not to charge on that. I believe they discussed it at length and decided not to charge, which, of course, is their right as an independent match review committee.
There was just one other thing from last night I want to ask you about, and a few people at the ground actually mentioned it to me while that previous South Warriors game was on, and I didn't see it while we're calling the game at the ground. I've also got an SMS here from Matt in Wollongong. Says, question for Graham. In the 70th minute of last night's Bulldogs-Roosters clash, Joey Manu was ruled to have lost possession to play the ball, despite obvious interference from Matt Burton. Notwithstanding the fact that it was a contentious call, the subsequent cutaway shot of Trent Robinson showed him clearly mouthing the words, "You effing cheat," not once but twice. What action should be taken to address coach misbehaviour in this form of questioning the integrity of match officials and or bringing the game into disrepute? Now, you look at something like that on the video, and again, I haven't seen it, but a few media types have mentioned it to me a little while ago, and now a listener raises it. Is that something you're aware of? Can you take action if you're a good lip reader or not?
Well, I'm aware that there's some scuttlebutt around, Andrew, but, you know, that they are matters that are off-field matters. You know, my job is solely related to things that happen on the field, and there's a different process to deal with anything like that. I'm not a lip reader, and he is in the coach's box, so there's nothing more I can really add to that one.
Graham, there's been a lot of talk around the kickoffs over the last couple of days and the potential scrapping of the kickoffs or whatever the case may be. Can you shed some light? Has that ever been raised by the commission, and do we foresee a time that the kickoffs may not be as they are?
No, something as dramatic as that or radical as that hasn't been discussed to the best of my knowledge at the commission level. Certainly when we had the review at the end of last season, we made the change to try and encourage more short restarts, whether it be from the goal line or from the halfway line. And whilst we haven't seen a lot of that so far this season, I think given that it's a relatively recent change, we might see that become more common as we get deeper into the season. It wasn't introduced, though, to specifically about players returning from long kicks some pace. It was more about putting another contest back into the game, but we were aware that a byproduct of that may be that we see less high-intensity collisions, but there's been nothing beyond that discussed at this stage. Of course, everything gets reviewed at the end of each season and the commission make those decisions.
Graeme, really interested in your comments on Monday about the obstruction rule, and that dominated a lot of our talk throughout the Easter weekend, especially from listeners disgruntled about it. And we were certainly under the impression that a lot of these decisions are made because it's a black and white rule. So I was really interested to hear you say on Monday that referees in the bunker, they do have discretion. They can express their feel for the game. Where are we at precisely for league fans looking at these games today and tomorrow when it comes to the obstruction rule? If there's an incident 25 metres off the ball, a slight bump, for example, like we saw last week, what do league fans need to look out for in these instances?
Well, Andrew, there's probably two primary types of obstruction that we see in relation to lead runners. And, you know, lead runner is the modern term for a decoy runner, which has been around for a long time. In fact, if you go back a few eras, obstruction used to be only shepherding when a player ran behind another player. But the way the game's evolved, we have these lead runners that go through and to try and fool the defence. And there are certain requirements on those players. But the two different types of obstruction that we see are one where a player will reverse, there'll be a collision, and the ball carrier will reverse the pass back to an inside runner who goes through the gap that's been created by that collision. In those circumstances, there's much less room for the opinion of the bunker official to come into it. But where we see the second type of obstruction, which is where the ball continues to be shifted across the back line, and a try will generally be scored somewhere near the corner and the collision has happened in field, then the bunker does have discretion to take into consideration where that collision took place and whether, in their opinion, and it is only their opinion, that would have had any impact on preventing the try from being scored.
And with the one that you said they probably got wrong, the Joey Manu try that was disallowed, it was the Dylan Edwards collision with Jared Waria Hargreaves. I'm sure you saw these quotes. Dylan Edwards, I'm sure, wasn't trying to be a smart aleck, but because we said the same thing in the commentary basically as you said on Monday, and that Dylan Edwards was never going to get there anyway. But regardless of that, they had their mini collision, whose ever fault that was. I was fascinated to read Dylan Edwards saying, guys, I would have got there. That's my job. If I didn't get across, I'd have been filthy with myself. I would have got over there. Seems hard for a 55-year-old non-athlete like me to believe, but he was adamant that that's his gig. He can get there, and that's how big a difference even a slight bump can make from so far away. Louis, you've only tied 5 or 6 years ago. What's confusing or frustrating you about the obstruction rule?
I don't mind the obstruction rule when it's right. My thing, especially when you see back rowers, usually it's around a back rower when you see most of the obstruction rules, because he's really trying to work over the three men, the inside shoulder or the outside shoulder. Usually the back row goes on the outside shoulder of a half and they go out the back, or they get that wrong. That takes the half out, which is then creating a three on two. My thing is when you get a guy who runs in and he actually makes the decision to turn in and still takes him out of play, and sometimes we don't know if that's going to be an obstruction or not. And the other one is when there's a defender who actually uses the obstruction rule to their favour because they know they've got no chance of getting there, so they just bump into a player. That would be my only concern with the obstructions. That I just thinking, how do we fix that up there, Graeme? It's a tough one, and
it's a very tough one. Louis. I mean, it's very difficult to fix, right? Because what these things come down to, because the play is affected in one way or another, or players are affected in one way or another, it then becomes a matter of opinion about what impact that contact had on the outcome. So there'll always be disagreement about those things, but I think we have to keep things in perspective here. If you think about, I know people want to take this radical step of let's throw out the bunker and let's keep them out of obstructions and all sorts of things. If you think about that, there's almost 1,700 tries scored last year. There's around 400 captain's challenges. We've got the bunker having an input into foul play, into 40-20s and to kick restarts. If you think about the small number of incidents that we argue about across the course of the season, based on opinion. Now, some we can say categorically the bunker is wrong, as we can with a referee, as we can with players when they make errors. But the vast majority of decisions that they make are right. It's a tremendous benefit to our game to reduce the amount of controversy that we have. But there'll still be a handful of decisions across the course of a season where we argue about the opinion that the bunker arrived at. It doesn't necessarily mean it's right or wrong. In fact, the opinion that I expressed last Monday, people are entitled to disagree with my opinion on that because it was just my opinion.
Yeah. I do have a text here, so Does Graham ever just jump in the car and start heading to the bunker? How far does he get before he turns around?
Well, if you wanted to see some carnage, put me in the bunker. Then people would really have something to complain about.
Felix, my latest craze is going through YouTube 1980s footy and just seeing, as you described earlier, the referees like Martin Weeks and John Danzy back in the day, just the simple little signal they'd give for a shepherd when it was pretty obvious. But as you say, it was really just one player running behind the other. It seemed a lot simpler.
It was a simpler time, Andrew, and of course we didn't have bunkers and replays and people poring over every second in high definition and in freeze frame and slow motion. But that's the game, and I'm not complaining about that. That's the way it's evolved, and the bunker is such a benefit to the game because of the scrutiny that it's under, and there will be differences of opinion from time to time.
Yeah, Grant, I agree with you. Look, we need the bunker to come up with right decisions. The only one that I get a little bit stuck on is go back to the Manly Parramatta game. And I can't remember who it was at the time, but the Parramatta player was never ever going to get there. And he actually got rewarded for being lazy. They're the ones we need to somehow get out of.
Luke and Moretti.
Luke and Moretti, that's the one. How do we work that out?
Jake Trbojevic and that was the type where I spoke about a moment ago where the ball carrier, I forget who it was, but was drifting across the field, turned the ball back inside to Tom Trbojevic, and he went straight through the gap where the collision took place. Now, in those situations, like, he's pretty close. Now, I take your point that he didn't look like he was in a massive hurry to get there, but who's to say that if Jake isn't in the line, which he's not entitled to do under the guidelines that have been put in place, he has to continue to run through the line. If he's not there, but perhaps he does have more urgency, but he's got an obstacle in front of him in Jake Trbojevic. So, but those ones are much more difficult because it happens very close to the play.